Dr. Dobia, Shuril 6.
I would also like to mention the situation where some of the prisoners in the concentration camp were allowed to receive food parcels from home. Obviously, the food parcels were only from those parts of the country which were occupied by the SS, and like Poland, Czechoslovakia, and where the service, mail service or parcel service, still existed. As far as the nationalities were concerned, the Germans were receiving parcels, so were the Czechs, the Belgians, and French, and even Poles. The receiving of the parcel was a very complicated matter. We were allowed to receive a parcel about once in 2 months. When we received the parcel, it was opened in front of the examining SS, who, if he fancied something, he took it, obviously, but always something was left behind, and it was a great help in the terrible starvation of the concentration camp. The condition was that we could thank for the parcel in our monthly or bi-monthly, again, it's so long ago, I don't recall, letters home. We could thank for the parcels and even for the contents, but we were not allowed to write home and ask for parcels. We always had to say that we are well and healthy. Consequently, it would have been strange to ask for food because it appeared that we were well fed from the letters we were allowed to write home. It soon became like in conditions when people suffer and try to better their lot. There are ways of finding improvements. So when somebody wanted a parcel from home, he simply wrote home and thanked for the parcel, which he never received, obviously, and described what he liked, that it was in the parcel. When the recipient of the letter read the letter, they knew that it was possible to receive parcels, and they sent, if they could, in some parts even of Czechoslovakia, the conditions of food were such that it was very difficult to scrape for a parcel for somebody else. But we did get occasionally parcels. I recall a case which might be of interest. There in the concentration camp, we were mostly political prisoners, with the exception of some Germans who were criminals. And they were the ones who, at the start of our stay or our incarcerations, were in charge of the internal machine. They were asked or ordered by the SS to be Lagerschreiber, Blockschreiber. The functions where they, in the hospital, they were Germans who never were doctors or who never even knew how to heal, but they got a preferential treatment like all German prisoners of war still got in the concentration camp. They were still treated better than all other nations. But suddenly, in about 1944, at the beginning, we received prisoners and we realized that they had green triangles. Political prisoners, we had red triangles. They were green triangles, and suddenly we noticed that other nationalities than Germans appeared among the prisoners. I was at that time in the hospital. Thinking back, it must have been at the end of 43, because later on I was transferred to the UP for fear of prosecution because of my knowledge of the atrocities. A Czech came as a sick person on my barrack. He had a green triangle and a T for Czech. Well, I was very upset having a criminal among us, but he was sick and he was treated the normal way. Suddenly, I realized that he was a very useful person. He was strong, he helped everywhere he could. He became so well known among the prisoners that they turned to him for help if they needed washing or supporting. It was this criminal who helped them. So I was intrigued, took him aside. I said, "Look, who are you?" And he said, "My name is Shimerda." It didn't mean anything to me. Then he said, "You don't know?" I said, "I'm sorry, I don't know. You don't know the name?" He said, "No, I'm sorry, I don't." He said, "I am the king of the Czech safecrackers." Well, it was very amusing, really. But he explained that he was in and out of prisons because, as he proudly claimed, there was no safe which he couldn't crack. I watched him and I realized that he never stole a piece of bread. He never behaved in an objectionable way. On the contrary, he was the star of the people who were helping. So I took him aside again. I asked him, "How is it possible that you, a man who can be so human and so helpful, that you became a criminal?" He explained it, that when he was a youngster, for fun or for kicks, he joined a group of some criminals who taught him how to open safes. And being mechanically minded, it was real fun for him. He went once at night to open a safe. They were caught. He was imprisoned. And he said from that time on, he had a criminal record. He simply could not get a job. What happened? To be alive, to keep alive, as he called it, he kept on cracking safes. Well, it appeared quite understandable, but during the time of our stay in the concentration camp, he became a well-known prisoner. One of my friends was a former professor of law at Charles University of Prague, where I graduated, and I knew him. He was very useful in the camp, very intelligent person. His name was Professor Dr. Vratislav Bušek. When we all noticed how useful this criminal was, we got together and realized that we could help the man, should we come out alive, by what is called erasing the record of criminal offenses. Professor Bušek, who was very high in the legal department of the country before and even afterwards, because he survived, agreed that we should do something. So at that time I took Shimerda aside and I told him, "What would you like to do best if should we save our lives and come home?" He said the only thing he would like would be having a service station. He's mechanically minded. He could repair cars and sell petrol. Finally, we got liberated. We came back to Czechoslovakia, I only for a short time. And what we did, we actually we made an application to the courts for the erasure of the crimes of this man, Shimerda. What happened afterwards, I'll tell you shortly, but I would like to tell you a very amusing, if you can call amusing in under conditions of the concentration camps. This man, Shimerda, came to me once and he said, "Look, so many Czechs are getting parcels, I'm not getting anything." I said, "Well, whom do you have at home?" He said, "I have my wife." I said, "Look, maybe she couldn't possibly send you parcels because she doesn't have enough to eat herself." He said, "Oh yes, she can. She still has something from the last crack." So I said, "Look, I tell you something. He did know German. I'll write a letter for you in German. Tell your wife, thank her for the parcel, and tell her what would you like?" He said, "Honey. I love honey. And I like bacon. And I like bread." So I wrote it for him, "Thank you for the parcel which contained honey. I especially liked the bread and the piece of sausage. It was such a great help. Thank you so much." And he was so excited, waited finally that he would get a parcel. After about 3 weeks, he comes to me waving a letter which arrived in German, is a translated form. And as soon as I started translating, I realized the terrible mistake what happened. His wife wrote, "You miserable creature, you write to me that I sent you a parcel. I never sent you one. It must have been that redhead who was after you all the time. Next time I meet her in town, I'll kick her teeth out." So it didn't work.
So what happened to him after the war?
After the war, we actually, in Prague, we could rent. At that time it was impossible. We chipped together whatever we could. We arranged for him. He had a service station. And he was as happy as a lark. In 1947, I left Czechoslovakia for good. I was advised by one of my former fellow prisoners, even now I wouldn't like to tell his name, whom I helped in the concentration camp. He suddenly, after the war, I realized that he was one of the top young communists, idealist, very interesting person, but a dedicated communist. After the war, he was very, very grateful to me, and he always, during the meetings, he claimed that I saved his life in Mauthausen, and he tried to help me. I refused the help for obvious political reasons. But finally, he called me. I was working at the Czechoslovak Glass Export Company as a senior jurist, senior legal advisor in Gablonc, or in Czech, Jablonec, in northern Bohemia. He asked me to come to Prague in my own interest. Well, I did. He didn't take me to his flat, as he sometimes did before. We walked in the streets, and he told me, "Look, you have to get out. You helped me. You saved my life. That's the only way how I can reciprocate and help you." He said, "Something will happen. If when it happens, I won't be able to help you. Get out." So it happened that I managed to get a passport. He helped me with it. I got a visa, business visa, to go to England. I went to England and I never returned. A few months later, Czechoslovakia became a communist country and remained ever since. He helped me to get out. But before I left, going back to our friend Šimerda, when I was leaving Prague on the train to Paris, I opened a newspaper and suddenly I see big headlines. The former safecracker Šimerda was caught in the vaults of the National Bank of Czechoslovakia trying to rob the gold in the safes. So it appears it was in his blood. However good he was, he was bored probably with what he was doing, and he still needed the incentive and the excitement of robbing.
Can you tell me about any public executions you witnessed at Mauthausen?
Yes, I witnessed one. The one I can really recall very vividly. In the summer of 1942, a German or Austrian, I don't recall, but I recall the name, Bonarevitz, escaped through the sewers of the concentration camp, Mauthausen. When he escaped, we had to stay for hours and hours on the Appellplatz and started to count and recount until it was established who the prisoner was who escaped. I remember that a few days later, he was recaptured not far from the concentration camp, trying to hide in the woods. He was brought back to the camp, and it was announced that he would be publicly hanged. At that time, in July 1942, we had to stand, all prisoners, on the Appellplatz, and Bonarevitz was brought in a little, like a pushcart, with the scaffolds at the back of it, and with the rope hanging down. He was paraded there and back in front of the prisoners, and in front of the procession was a band, musical band, consisting of some of the prisoners who knew how to play. I recall that the tune they played in German was Kommt zurück, kommt zurück, come back, come back. It was a popular song at that time. He was in the middle then of the Appellplatz. The SS put the rope over his neck. His hands were tied in the back, and the little stool was kicked. He dropped, but with him, the rope broke. So he had to stand up. He wasn't dead. They took off the rope to the merriment of the SS. Everybody waited until another rope was brought. The man was hanged again, and he was hanged until he died in front of us. One of the most cruel and horrible sights I have ever experienced in my life.
Was he political or criminal?
He was a criminal. But it had no bearing on what they did to the prisoners. He escaped, and they mentioned that anyone who would even try to escape would be hanged.
Was this the only attempted escape that you heard about, or did attempted escapes occur frequently?
Everybody knew that among the prisoners that any escaping would be punished by death. But there was another case of mass escape, which is very well known in the annals of the concentration camp of Mauthausen. That happened closely before the end of the war, from the barrack number 20. We knew that they were very special Soviet officers imprisoned in that camp, in that barrack. They were transferred from somewhere else, but they did not even enter our register. All prisoners were registered, and we knew because everybody had the Karteikarte, as I mentioned. But these had none. They were separately on the barrack 20. Once, I would have to look up again the date. I'm sorry, I don't recall. It came so suddenly now that I do not recall exactly the date. There was an alarm in the camp. Sirens sounded. And what we heard subsequently was the following story. The Soviet soldiers and officers made arrangements to escape en masse. So while they were exercising outside with their clogs, we were wearing clogs of wood but cloth over it. They were marching around and they were asked to clean the barrack. So they brought the chairs, there were a few chairs, some of the tables, and they were not many, but beds, and put them aside, cleaned them, and they had to march around for exercise. At a pre-arranged time, by the way, on the side there was a posten box where an SS man with a machine gun aimed at that barrack was constantly on the alert. At a certain moment, pre-arranged by the Russian soldiers, all of them took off their clogs and with all force threw the clogs against the man with the machine gun. They may have been some 200 prisoners, as far as I have never seen them, but from the records, it's obvious that they were over 100. If 200 clogs hit the man, some of them missed, some of them didn't, but they knocked out the man with the machine gun. When they knew that the man collapsed, they pushed the chairs and whatever they was in a pile towards the wall, climbed over the wall, but there was wire, electric wire, like all around the camp. That was again prearranged by some experts who cut off the wires by hitting some nails in a sack over the wires and causing a shortcut. They climbed over the wall, all of them climbed over the wall and disappeared. Now there was an alarm, all the SS were alerted, went out looking for the prisoners, and all of them, with the exception of about four or five, were killed, either on the spot or brought back and executed, and they were all cremated in the crematorium in Mauthausen. Four or five of them escaped, and I recall a very touching moment in about a year ago in Mauthausen, when I revisited the camp for a reunion, when one of those Soviet soldiers who escaped came to the camp. We spoke to him and we met him there. He managed, without the knowledge of German, through starvation, no food, only by stealing at night and sleeping somewhere hidden during the day and walking clandestinely at a time of war, he reached and escaped back to the Soviet Union.
Did you or any of your comrades in the camp have any contact at all with the civilian population surrounding Mauthausen camp?
No. There was no way of reaching them, with the one exception. There was a commando of Spanish experts in making stone parts from granite stone. There was a privately owned quarry in the town of Mauthausen. It still exists there, between the railway station and the concentration camp. In German or in Austria, it's called Poschacher, Firma Poschacher. The Spanish called it Pochaca because they couldn't pronounce sh, and it was called Comando Pochaca. And I recall that about two dozen Spanish prisoners were daily transported to that quarry where they worked for the private enterprise of breaking stones. They were the only ones who could see the population. I personally never did. From the time of my entry into the camp to the time when I was liberated, I did not see any population.
How did you come to be liberated?
During the time of the end of April, we knew that the armies were approaching the camp from both sides. We knew it because we had a radio receiver hidden in the coke of the crematorium. We realized that something had to be done in case that in the last minutes the SS would try to annihilate the camp by either burning it down or shooting the prisoners. That was a possibility which all prisoners had in mind, and it was very, very dangerous. It even appeared that at one time, right at the beginning of May, a Flammenwerfer in German, a stone, fire-throwing tank, appeared on the forecourt of the camp. All prisoners were extremely worried and frightened. I must say really frightened, because we thought that the SS would not want to leave behind witnesses of the atrocities they committed during the years of their occupation of the camp. As it happened, suddenly we realized in one morning that the SS were gone. Instead, there was Viennese police guarding us. We had nothing about the policemen because they never heard us, but they were ordered not to let anybody out of the camp. The SS, as we heard afterwards, changed their uniforms into Wehrmacht so that they wouldn't be caught, and disappeared in the woods or in the neighboring villages, trying to parade as soldiers and not as SS. Obviously, they were caught because all SS were marked under their arms, tattooed with their rank, not rank, with their numbers, SS numbers, so they could be identified. As soon as we knew that the time was coming near, our cell, which was organized in the camp, was directed by mostly Spanish people or people who actually were fighting in the war and knew the details far more than some of us did. Even though I was an officer of the reserve, I was not in the field fighting. I was called to occupy, together with another man, he was Spanish, and his name was Juan de Diego. He's still alive and lives in Paris. We were asked to, at the moment given by the organizers at the top, to occupy the telephone exchange in Mauthausen, in the quarters of the SS, for reasons that Juan de Diego was very skilled in using every gun on the surface of the globe, as he called it, and I could talk, if necessary, on the telephone in English, in Russian, or in German, or several languages, in case it would have been needed. We actually did that. But what happened, we could not do it still while the police was there. On the 5th of May, there was a tremendous uproar in the camp because somebody called and started shouting, "The Americana son do," that is in an Austrian. In German, it would have been the Americana sind da, but in the Austrian, that's why I know it was an Austrian who screamed it, "The Americana son do." And at that moment, the excitement was something indescribable. The prisoners immediately took whatever they could out of the barracks, pushed it towards the wall, facing south. That was the road which was approaching Mauthausen, the camp. The one part was immediately directed to cut the wires by throwing a sack of nails over the electric wiring. When this happened, by arrangement which we knew, a roll of toilet paper which was stolen from the SS barracks was flown in a certain spot near the entrance to the camp. From that we knew that the electricity was off, so we pushed the